The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney. Hello, Lionel.
Hello, Richard. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all our listeners. We're back a week earlier than advertised. The full team, that's me, you and Daniel, will be convening next week for the first regular episode of 2022. But we thought we'd kick off the year with this bonus episode, I suppose. It's something a little bit different.
Yes, what's the story, Richard? Who are we going to be hearing from today?
We're going to be hearing a long interview from a young rider, Kian Utebroeks. He is Belgian, he's 18 years old, and he's just signed for Bora Hansgrohe, and he's tipped to be one of the sport's future stars. I went to visit him at his family's home close to the Wallonia-Flanders border, which right there is something that makes him quite interesting, and we talk a bit about that. Just before Christmas, I went to visit him. I'd heard a lot about him before I went to see him. I think everybody in cycling is vaguely familiar with the name, even if, like me, a lot of people struggle with the pronunciation.
Yeah, so Kian Utebroeks.
Well, that's it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. I'll be practicing that before he starts racing. But already people are calling him the next Remco, which seems absolutely extraordinary. I suppose the next Remco is just about to start primary school, probably.
He's
in
just
Belgium
being born
somewhere.
Yeah. It could be, I don't know, Wout van Aert's young child. I don't know. He was courted, Utebroeks, this is, by Quickstep. Joined them on a training camp in Italy. We'll hear a bit about that. Also, Team DSM came pretty close to joining them, and Jumbo Visma for a bit because his coach was working for Jumbo Visma. But eventually signed for 3 years with Bora Hansgrohe, and he'll make his debut in Mallorca in a couple of weeks. In the old days, of course, an 18-year-old, we probably wouldn't hear much about him for a good few years. But these days, who knows?
Well, already, Richard, there's some Belgian beef brewing, isn't there? I suspect this is inevitable when a young pretender comes along to challenge the young pretender. It's already kicking off, is it?
Well, Evenepoel, in response to some of the headlines in Belgium about the new Remco, he tweeted, "When he becomes double Belgian champion, European champion and world champion, we can talk!" Exclamation mark. And just in case we haven't got the message, Evenepoel added, "Or wins the European Championships with a 10-minute lead." Another exclamation mark. And the exclamation marks were supposed to indicate levity, I think. But I'm not sure. I think a raw nerve was hit perhaps there with Remco Evenepoel. But anyway, that'll be fun to watch. Utebroeks came through the same Belgian junior team as Evenepoel, Acroc Tormans. Lots of very talented riders have graduated from that team. And in fact, we heard from and about that team in the French special, the Flanders Redux French special that we did after the World Championships last year. But the club's chairman said that Utebroeks could be the best of the lot, that his performances on climbs and training were even more impressive than his race results. He has no equal in climbing or time trialing, he said. He does things I've never seen before. Of course, we have no idea how good a cyclist Utebroeks will become, but I do know that I've rarely had such a warm welcome as the one that I got from his family when I arrived at their home on a cold, dark December evening.
Hello there. Hi.
Yes, I will put the mask too.
Oh yeah, just sorry. I thought, no, don't worry. I don't.
Yes, but it's.
I just thought.
Because we are doing renovation works for the moment.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult moment for us.
Yeah.
We don't have the cuisine is a problem for the moment, and so it's.
Yeah. No, don't worry.
We have everything here to eat and to.
Don't worry. Yes,
we cannot plan.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Thank you.
Do you want a coffee or a beer or some water?
Just a water would be great.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Perfect. A sparkling or
sparkling if you have
okay.
it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have it.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. Perfect. You can sit where you want.
Great.
Just.
Great.
Yes, because I thought. not English people, they drink beer, so I brought some beer from the region.
Oh, wow. I'm driving, so if you bought it special, I can maybe have one.
Okay, because we have some, it's really from the region.
Okay,
yes.
Perfect, great. Great. Hello. Hi there. How are you?
I'm fine.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Yeah, I am. I'm sorry I've arrived in the dark because it looks very nice around here.
Yes.
The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. And now you can wear the Super Sapiens Energy Band, the first and only wearable that can display real-time glucose data directly from Abbott's LibreSense Glucose Sport Biosensor. The Super Sapiens Energy Band is available at supersapiens.com for €159.
Thanks very much to Super Sapiens, our title sponsor. Super Sapiens, of course, uses the Abbott LibreSense Glucose Sport Biosensor to continuously monitor your blood glucose levels, giving you invaluable insights into fueling and whether you're fueling correctly. Must say congratulations to Abbott for being selected as one of 10 CES 2022 Innovation Awards honorees in the fitness and sport category. The CES Innovation Awards program is an annual competition honoring outstanding design and engineering in consumer technology products. And Abbott have been recognized for developing the world's first biosensor, the LibreSense, designed for all athletes to better understand the correlation between their glucose levels and athletic performance. For more information on Super Sapiens, go to supersapiens.com. Thanks very much for agreeing to do this. It's been a few weeks we've been setting this up. But I thought, you know, I'm just really fascinated to speak to you at this point in your career, mm-hmm. as you sort of start out. And it's such an interesting story. But usually when I meet a writer and do an interview, I've done loads of research and I know loads about them. And I know just bits about your story, really. I don't, mm-hmm. you know, because you're so young and you're just starting out. So that's quite interesting for me. So, you know, I want you to tell me everything. Going right back. I mean, you know, first of all, where are we? You mentioned that we're on the sort of border of Wallonia and Flanders. So did you grow up here?
Yeah, exactly. So I grew up here. I went to school in Flanders, so where they speak Dutch. And let's say my first cycling team, that was in the Walloon part. So I was a little bit in between both regions. So I did my studies in Flanders and my sports I did in the Walloon part.
Right. And is that how, so you speak French as well and Dutch and English, obviously very well as well. I mean, where did you learn the English?
Oh yeah, English. A little bit at school, because we learn it for sure at school, but the most now in the pro team, let's say, or even with the junior team, because I was last year with the junior team of Bora Hansgrohe, and there we had also different nationalities, so we speak English, and there you learn for sure. If you practice it with other people, you learn the most.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
That's okay. Wonderful. Well, I delivered a beer here.
It's,
fantastic.
It's local.
Thank
it's
you. Yeah.
It's
very nice, dark Belgian beer. What fantastic hospitality! Thank you. Mm.
It's really good, and it's very good with cheese.
Mm. Oh, and cheese as well. Fantastic. Really being looked after here. Thank you. That's wonderful. Thank you. This is all banned food and drink for a cyclist, but
it's eat it every day for becoming stronger.
Excellent. That's wonderful. If you hear me eating in this recording, we can edit that out, luckily. So you started cycling in Wallonia. You know, what's significant about that? Is the cycling culture quite different there?
Yeah, exactly. So in the Flemish region, it's really popular. If we go back to when I was, let's say, 13, 14 years old, if you go then to races in Flanders, there are 100 participants. If we go to the Walloon region, we were sometimes with 12 riders at the start. So for sure, there we see a really big difference. But in the end, the biggest difference was that in the Walloon part, they never put pressure on you. The Flemish part is already a little bit more from the beginning. Okay, you need to win races, you need to do this, do that. The Walloon part is really calm to that. And they had also, where I was then, they had a really nice program with races in France, because they speak already French in this, in their home language. So yeah, they went to France, and for sure for me that was quite interesting, because then I could do races like Tour de l'Ain, who are in the mountains, and that's for a development of a rider, it's really nice to do. Yeah,
cool. And what age were you then when you started cycling?
It was around 13 years old, yeah, then I rode my first race. And yeah, before I did also some, you know, I went sometimes on the bike or on the mountain bike, but not really in competition. That started from 13 years old.
And yeah. What prompted your interest? Was there a spark? Was there, you know, something? Or is it in the family? How did you?
Yeah, so in the family, we have nobody who did sports. I am the first one now. But if we look to the whole story, let's say in the beginning, I was a really big fan of racing with cars and everything. And I made circuits by myself here in the garden. I really rally circuits. And there I rode with my mountain bike, and I did like a time trial then. And then sometimes I asked friends to join me to do that. And then, you know, you had already kind of competition feeling, and I liked that really much. And then in the end, I say, yeah, why not starting racing on the road or something? And yeah, from the beginning, I liked it very much. I did not win directly races or something, but just to do it, to the adrenaline and the races and those things, I liked very much. So, and so it started step by step.
I mean, we're not talking about very long ago, of course, here. Yeah. Five years ago, I guess, you started. But then, you know, how did you get on? You said you weren't very good, but you must have adapted to or progress pretty quickly, I guess.
Yeah. So in the beginning, I never won a race. I was always second, third, maybe fifth. And in the beginning, you also don't think about becoming a pro rider, or in my mind, that was not possible. That was not an option. But then, let's say in the U17, there we had some bigger international races. And then I could really battle for the first places. And for sure, in my second year under 17, I won a lot of international races also uphill. And then in my mind, it was like, yeah, maybe I can become one day a pro, maybe. But then I had not in my mind World Tour or something. But then I thought, okay, I am maybe not so bad, but for sure, you can never compare the level of youth races with the pro level. You can be in a year that's less strong, so there are so many factors. And then the biggest step was, let's say, in the junior category. Then I won Kuurne. I got a new trainer, a guy of Jumbo-Visma, Mark Lamberts was his name. And he did some performance tests with me, and then we saw that my values were very high and that I could have some potential to maybe become a pro in the World Tour. And then the interest of other teams start coming, and then, you know, then the negotiations and so on start.
And by now you're riding for, you know, a big junior team in Flanders. Tell me how that came about and what a change that was from riding for a club in Wallonia.
Yeah, so I changed from Sprint to 2000, was it, to Akroch Tormans. And then you saw it was directly more professional. So we got bikes from the team. We rode also there a really international program, even more international. Almost everything was international. We went to training camps in Spain. So it was already, let's say, like a little continental team for a junior team. But and that was the biggest difference. And that was also something that what I wanted, because in the beginning, it's also very nice. You have no pressure and everything is more like playing. But at the moment, you want to improve and to ride bigger races, to do better training camps and so on. And then for sure in Belgium, Agroch is the biggest team. So therefore I went there. Yeah.
And
they have a strong link with De Koning Quickstep, don't they? A lot of riders. Well, a lot of their riders have gone to lots of teams. They've, I mean, Remco Evenepoel's one of their former riders. So by that point, and we'll return to Koerner, Brussels Koerner in a moment, but was there a pathway there then that you could see at that point to the kind of quick step or to another team? You were being coached by somebody connected with Jumbo Visma. Were you open-minded about where the path might take you?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was really Jumbo Visma, what we thought, because my trainer was from that team and we were really in that direction. For sure, the Agro was, like you say, different. They say, no, don't go to Jumbo Visma. Quickstep is better. And I had also contacts then with Quickstep. So it was, really in the beginning between Jumbo Visma and Quickstep. I went on training camp also with Quickstep then and so on. And then it was really special. Then for sure there were also other teams, but then Bora contacted me, my trainer also, what's now my trainer, Dan Lorang, and they said, we just want to know the guy behind the newspapers, let's say. And then the first talk with them was so nice, and I felt really easy with them, and there was just like something special what I don't had with other teams. And then everything changed in one time from my trainer and my team, let's say, Jumbo Visma and the Koenig Quickstep to Bora. So, that was...
So just rewinding a bit, that victory at Koerner, Brussels Koerner is a performance that people talk about. Talk me through that. Tell me what happened in that race.
Oh, yeah. And that race, in the beginning, I didn't start with expectations because it's a cobblestone race. And I was at that moment 62 or 61 kilograms, so much too light for that race normally. So I thought, we will try to win maybe with the team the race, but for myself, it was also my first race in the junior category, so I say, look, we will see what happens and no pressure. But then in the race, it was really hard and cold, and then we really rode with the team like the Koenig Quickstep the whole day in the front, make a high rhythm, and then there gets riders dropped, and then on the Hotond, one of the hard climbs, I attacked, and then we were away with seven riders or something, and then just after the what was it? One of the not one of the climbs, but I think after the Côte de Trieux, I attacked alone a little bit farther when the peloton tried to came back, and I say, if the peloton come back, this is not good for me because then it won't be a sprint. So then I tried it alone, but it was still I think 50 kilometers or something. So, but I say, okay, what can I lose? It's my first junior race. I try it. And we have also from the team some more explosive guys in the bunch. So then if it comes back, there is no worry. And in the end, I could stay in the front. And that was for sure.
So
for
50-kilometer solo win.
Something like that,
I mean, you know, a young Belgian junior, a performance like that in a country like this where cycling is a national sport, that must have got you a lot of attention. And
exactly.
You know, did it was almost life changing. Did something happen from that point?
Yeah, for sure. Koerner was something that changed a lot because then you get the whole press on it. Afterwards, there are guys who say, "Wow, this is an amazing performance," and then it comes again in the press, and then the whole thing starts. And then Remco did the same kind of attack when he won Koerner. So then they start comparing with Remco and that whole story. And in the end, in the beginning, it's nice. You come in the newspapers. It's like, you are a good rider and you are like Remco. And then it feels also very nice in the beginning. But in the end, for sure, it puts also a kind of pressure on a rider. For sure, if the season goes further, you cannot win every race, but they expect it that you win everything. But for sure, that's not so easy.
Is that a factor in joining a German team, perhaps? Because, you know, Belgium, this is such a pressure cooker. And I think
to kind of quick step, it's sort of the national team in a way. It might, going there might be a more pressurized environment for a young Belgian. Is that a factor in joining Bora Hansgrohe?
Yeah, that was for sure one of the factors. Because Bora really don't want to put pressure, want to minimalize a little bit the press. So therefore, I chose also more an international team, like Israel Startup Nation was also an option there. But a team too close to Belgium or in Belgium was then less good, because for sure, if you go to the Koenig Quickstep with Remco then in the team, it can explode, let's say.
How, I mean, these comparisons with Remco Evenepoel, I guess it's inevitable. He is an exception, you know, somebody who didn't race as an under 23, went straight from junior to professional. There are one or two others now, but you're another one. He perhaps opened the door to that, I guess. But how do you feel about these comparisons with Evenepoel?
Yeah, like I say in the beginning, you think it's, you know, it's one of your heroes, it's a very good rider, and then you think, wow, they compare me with a guy of him. But in afterwards, there is really a pressure what starts also in just in your mind. From when you start at a race, you think already, oh, I need to win this race, because otherwise the press will say, yeah, he's not so good. So it put kind of pressure, but then it's also a really good mental school for in a junior category, because in the end, if you are good in the pros, that will happen also. But then I really needed to change something in my mind from, okay, now I go my own way. I don't look to that. And if I win a race, it's very nice. They can compare me. If I don't win, I don't follow my road and go step by step. Because in the end, you cannot compare two riders from this age. I am sure that Remco is a bit better in time trial also. I have maybe some other points where I am stronger. I also don't know now yet if I can become like him or can become like a very, very good rider in the World Tour. But I think it was, in the end, a very good mental school to try to don't put too much pressure on you, the pressure you get from the press. So in the end, I could accept and I could live with it. It was no problem. But in the beginning, for sure, it was really, really nice if they compare you with such a good rider.
Well, I mean, you know, I suppose from Kern onwards, you are you're in the spotlight and you're on this path to becoming a professional rider. I can hear that you're an educated guy as well. You're still at school at this point. How were you balancing, you know, school life, school work with cycling and the possibility or the probability that you were going to become a professional cyclist?
Yeah, so last year school was really the most important thing, and then cycling almost my whole, let's say, how can you say it, career until now, was school was the most important, and then cycling was something for fun. For sure then next year it becomes already a little bit more important, but school was still the most important. If we look now at the moment, I'm studying also still psychology at the university, but really in a stretched plan. So I do a lot less than other students. So let's say that cycling is for sure my job next year. So I need to focus a lot on it. It's, let's say, now a bit more important, but I also don't want to lose my studies and also stay doing a little bit of that. Yeah. Mm.
What university are you studying at?
I am Brussels.
Brussels. It's interesting. Thijs Benoot, I remember, was an economics student at Ghent, and Florian Vermeersch, who you probably know very well, is a history student at Ghent as well, isn't he?
Exactly.
So there are a few others who followed that path. Yeah. So is it your intention to carry on your studies through the first few years of your career?
Yeah, I will for sure try that, for sure in a more easy way. I try to balance it that I don't have also too much pressure of it. It's now also the first year, really find a good balance in between those two things. But for sure I want to continue that the next years, yeah.
What were you good at school? What were your subjects?
It was, for sure, I was not bad in the language things, like French, Dutch, those things. Mathematics was also quite okay, but more, yeah, the language things when I need to talk for the people or something in school, that were things what I really liked.
Mm. And how did you said sport wasn't in your family, cycling wasn't in your family. So how did your family feel about the direction that your life was taking, that professional cycling became a possibility?
In the beginning, it was nice for them because they say, yeah, if he wants to do sports, why not? But then it became also more seriously, and then they were also maybe on one side also a bit afraid of it, because yeah, it's something really different. It's a job with risks, so it's different than doing just a normal job. And they also are not used to it, so they were not, let's say, really happy with it. For sure, they were happy that I can become professional, and they also say, yeah, you need to take that chance. For sure, also because I like it. But in the end, they also say, yeah, don't lose your studies, stay doing it, because if something happens, you have also that part still next to you.
It was unusual for riders to turn professional so young, and Evenepoel's mm-hmm. kind of opened the door, because he, you know, he turns professional and he wins San Sebastian in his first year. So teams are looking obviously at younger riders.
Yeah.
But was there any opposition? Did you have any mentors or anybody else advising you to not turn professional so young?
Yeah, there were. I talked with a lot of guys. Some guys say, yeah. Also with my trainer, for example, we said, yeah, stay 1 year in under 23 and go then to the professionals. And I was also not sure to do it directly, because in the end, it's a really big step. You don't know how your body will react on it. But then we had with several World Tour teams the option also that if it doesn't work, I could go to there, like for example, DSM. Then if it doesn't work, I could go to the under 23 back and play in between those two, or being professional and doing some under 23 races with the development program. But then with Bora, we had also some talks, and there the junior team was a really important part in it, because then I could get used already a little bit to the World Tour team, doing some training camps with them, let's say being introduced in the team. I could work already with my trainer for the next years. I lived already a little bit like, I would not say in way of training or way of eating, but in way of traveling and those things. Yeah, it was already an international team. So that was really, let's say, already a first step to make the step to the World Tour or to a professional, international professional team less big. So that was really something attractive to do. And also now this year with Bora, they really are making something special for younger riders, so that we have the World Tour program, but that we make also another program with smaller races for younger guys where they can do also smaller races where they can ride for the victory even. So like for me, I will maybe also have sometimes opportunity to get my chance. And for sure, I have also still the possibility to ride with the national team under 23 races. So for sure, it will not be next year a whole World Tour program or a whole professional, you know, program.
It's a development within a World Tour team. Yeah,
exactly.
And I mean, your results are one thing, but, you know, from hearing about what coaches and other people have said about also your performances in training and so on, it's clear that, you know, you are in their view a special talent. What are your main strengths? Climbing? You're quite tall, but I think you're a climber, aren't you?
Yeah.
So do you see, what kind of rider would you like to become?
Yeah, so if we look for the moment, it's more climbing and time trial. My sprint is absolutely not so good. It's really bad. But yeah, more the longer climbs, that's what it was last year, what it is for the moment. For sure, we saw also now last year, I still grow some centimeters. So I am now around 1.85 meters. And around 68 kilograms. So, and we can reduce still the fat. So we are on a good way for the moment for becoming a GC rider. That's also in my mind what I want to become. That's my dream, to become a GC rider. But for sure, now I guess I will finish growing. And then you can also have a development in muscles and become more a classic rider. I think I will never become a really big classic rider for the Flemish races, but maybe for the Walloon classics like Maximilian Schachmann or something, who's a little bit, let's say who has a little bit too much weight for being a GC rider. But if we really look to the performance level now, then we would say GC rider. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about Remco Evenepoel a lot, and an amazing talent, but he has been more than anybody else in the glare of the spotlight of the Belgian media in particular, and probably has made a few mistakes in things he's said and the way he's behaved. Is that also something you look at and, you know, you can see maybe things to avoid, pitfalls to dance around?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, from everything you see, it's... you see sometimes if he says something, how the press reacts on it. And then for sure, you pick it up and you say, okay, I don't need to say this in the press. Or for sure, that are all things where I look to. Also from other riders, because, yeah, it's really interesting to learn it. It's special that we need to learn it now already so young. But that's for sure something where I look to.
And... you spent some time with De Koninck-Quick-Sepp at a training camp. where was the camp and what was that experience like?
It was 1 week in San Pellegrino. They were on altitude there. They were there for 3 weeks with the whole team. It was just after the COVID period. And then they asked if I wanted to join. And for sure, that was for me like a little dream to ride with all those, with Alaphilippe and with, that was amazing. And for me, it was, let's say, my first introducement with pro riders. Yeah.
Really? And how did you get on? I mean, how did you get on the rides? Where did you feel you were at compared to those guys?
Yeah. In the beginning, I was also afraid. I say, I didn't know if I could follow them on the hills. But then in the trainings, on the climbs, for sure I had the luck that we were in the climbs, so where I am good. And then sometimes I know Joao Almeida, he attacked, and then I went in his wheel and I could follow him, and that was really something. What I say, whoa.
Well,
this
I mean,
is nice.
Wow, because he went on obviously that year to almost win the Giro, finished fourth overall, and you were a training camp is not a race, but.
Yeah.
Did you feel you were, that he wasn't a million miles away?
Yeah, exactly. For sure, he was still stronger because I think it was also not his plan to kill me completely. But for sure, mentally, that was something from, okay, I am also not so bad that I can not at all follow them. I know that I still need to progress really a lot, but it's also not a mission impossible. Mm. Yeah.
Did you feel intimidated or shy around them? Did you speak to them? I mean, Alaphilippe, did you speak to him? Did you speak to him in French as well?
So in the beginning, I was really shy a bit and really calm, and I didn't know what to say. But I was there, I think 1 week or 10 days. And then in the end, for sure, it becomes a bit more easy. And then I spoke almost to everyone, also to Alaphilippe in French then. Yeah, they were really friendly and really open, and they really don't act like a superstar. They are, just really nice,
So did you learn a lot that week, do you think?
Yeah, I think yes, Also the way how they train, how they live. For sure also I looked what they eat and I asked a lot. And I think that was really a good way to get introduced also to that world.
You've obviously been courted, by several teams. You mentioned DSM, Jumbo-Visma, De Koninck-Quick-Sepp, Bora Hansgrohe. Was it difficult to say no to people? Was that quite hard?
Yeah, it was really hard. Because, for sure there were teams where you had not so big talk or where you had not so big contacts with. But then you had a lot of teams where you were deep in negotiations and everything. And then in the end, yeah, you need to say no. And like, for example, Israel Startup Nation, I know Rick Verbrugge very well, because Marcel Verbrugge, the father of Rick, he was, and he's still a little bit my coach. That's a little bit the man who made me in cycling. And then for sure, yeah, then it's really difficult to say, okay, no, we don't choose for you. The same with DSM. We had a really good relationship with Iwan Spekenbrink, and we really felt also good with them, because in the end, it was really a choice between DSM and Bora Hansgrohe. And I felt I didn't sleep a lot of nights, because it was really difficult to say no to one of those two. But in the end, I had a little bit better feeling than with Dan Lorang. So then I chose for Bora, but it was really hard. Yeah.
Mm. And the World Championships were obviously near here, yeah. Leuven. I guess that was a major focus for you this year.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that they were a bit of a disappointment, but you had quite an upset in the before the World Championships started. Something quite bizarre. Tell me what happened.
Yeah. So I went back from the Europeans. And for sure, for some days there was nobody at home. Even my parents, they were still on the road back. And so my grandparents picked me up at the airport, bring me home. I went sleeping. They went back home. They put out the lights. And then there was like on the, in front, I opened my window, let's say, of my sleeping room, and then there was someone, a crime, let's say, who wanted to enter my window, and in the beginning I heard a lot of noise there, so I went to the window and looked through it, and then there was someone at let's say a half meter or 1 meter from me, because he wanted to enter the window. For sure, I closed the window then that he could not enter. I ran downstairs to put the alarm and everything, because I didn't put it because my parents still needed to come home. But then the day after, I went on the time trial bike again, and then I had in one time a lot of pain in the back of my knee, and then it was like a little muscle tear that I had. So then we were thinking one moment from, maybe the preparation. Yeah, for sure, the preparation was not good anymore. But in the beginning, we were also really thinking, maybe it's finished for the World Championship.
And that injury, had you sustained that injury in that incident, in that moment of someone trying to get into your house and you shutting the window and getting rid of them? Is that when the injury happened?
Yeah, exactly. Because also, for sure, some hours before I rode the European Championship, so the muscles were still hard or a little they were not recovered or in a normal state. And then I was really running and also not thinking for sure about, okay, I need to pay attention and not jump down the stairs. And then I went just back sleeping, and the day after directly I had pain. So, yeah.
So that, because they must have been something you were looking forward to, I guess, all year.
Yeah.
Did you feel that you weren't able to perform at your best there?
Yeah, I was not, that I am sure I was not at my best. I had not the preparation I wanted, because for sure, normally you need to do some interval training. We were some days off, almost 1 week off the bike. Could then not directly start with interval training, because then you make the tear just bigger. And then the weekend before it, we start with really hard training to open the lungs and everything, that we that the body was still a bit used to it. But you felt also in the training from, okay, this is not the level I have normal and that I want to have. But in the end, then you also don't need to think too much about it, because then your performance will just be even lower. So then I was thinking, okay, just go all out with what you have for the moment, and that will still be, it will maybe not be the best, but it will still be a level where you can ride for a good place.
And then the road race, you had a lot of bad luck, didn't you? You crashed early on, I think, in the road race.
I crashed already at, let's say, 2 or 3 kilometers from after the start. But I had no big injuries or something, so I went back on my bike, but I was for sure dropped. And then when I came back, let's say 3 kilometers later, after 6 kilometers of racing, then everyone in front of me crashed, and I went in the descent to the Wendpers. That was, and yeah, I went full on it and did like a salto and crashed on my back. So yeah, then then I wanted to go again on the bike, but the bike was broken. So the frame was broken, and yeah, the handlebars were also not able anymore to ride. So then I needed to wait on my other bike, and that took a lot of time. And yeah, then it was for sure trying to come back, but yeah, that was also not so easy, because at the moment that I was back on the bike, the race director decided to make barrage, so all the cars passed me, and even my sport director, he said, yeah, I cannot bring you back, because it's not possible, they don't want it. And then it was like a whole race going all out.
And you didn't give up, though. I was watching the race, and you know, I was on the circuit, and every time you went through, you were on the front of that little group. Yeah. So you didn't give up.
Yeah, that was for me, because in the beginning, for sure, I had in my mind, okay, I try to come back, and then we see, maybe there is still a possibility. But after a while, for sure, after doing that 40 kilometers or 30 kilometers, you also know this is a mission.
How disappointing was that? Because it was a kind of local world championship, you know, once in a generation opportunity, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that disappointing?
Really hard. Also, directly in the beginning, because it's so close to your home, and you lived for it, and you wanted to perform there. Your family is there. A lot of people you know are there. And then, it was really hard in the beginning. And then I also say it from... Yeah, because I had also a lot of pain of my crash in my back. But then I say also, if I stop now the race and go all off the circuit, then then it's also not nice for nobody to don't see me racing. And also for me mentally, then I should say, okay, what do you have done? You need to have like a little bit more character and keep on going. So then I say, okay, I just continue as hard as I can. I say next year, if I am in the pro category, I will suffer as hard as I need to suffer now. I will also suffer from start to finish, maybe. So I say, I just go all out and we see what happened. And in the beginning, try to come back. And in the end, just I don't know what I had in my mind, but I say I keep on going.
So, I mean, do you know your cycle? Are you into cycling history? Do you know? Are you interested in the sort of history of the sport and things like that? Are you a keen follower of the sport as well? Do you watch a lot of races?
Before not, now a little bit more. So really about the history from 50 years ago or even more, I don't know so much, but now I follow it. And last 2-3 years, I start following it a lot. Yeah,
I mean, people compare you to Remco Evenepoel, but maybe Eddie Merckx is a better comparison, because he also straddled sort of Flanders and Wallonia, didn't he?
Yeah, for sure. That's the biggest hero of Belgium.
Have you met Eddie Merckx?
No, never. He's his son, yes. Axel, yes. I had some contacts with him, but... Eddie never, no.
Axel would have been wanting you for his team, was he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I know in the under 17, I rode on the Merckx bike and I became Belgium champion. And then my team made really a nice white bike with the colors and with the Belgium colors. And it was also an Eddie Merckx bike. And that was really wow. And Eddie Merckx bike in the Belgium colors, that I was really proud of it.
So
that bike.
I'll test you now, quiz you. Who was the last Belgian to win a Grand Tour? Do you know?
It was not Eddie Merckx.
It wasn't, sure. But it wasn't that long after. So it's been a long time. It's been a long time. Johan de Munck, I believe, in 1979, the Giro. Think.
Okay.
So somebody not many people know about, but it's one of these strange anomalies, because Belgium is such a cycling country. It's been so long since they've won a Grand Tour.
Yeah.
So it could be you or Remco, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. We will see what happens. For sure it would be a dream to do that. Yeah.
I don't think it would be so easy to walk down any street in any city in
in Belgium if you did that.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't have to buy yourself a beer, would you?
Yeah, I think also. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But every Belgian rider has a fan club. Do you have a fan club yet, or?
Yeah, I don't made some by myself, but now, yeah, there were some people in the Walloon part also who made it, who asked if they could do it, and I say, yeah, why not? And yeah, so yeah, that's also really something popular in Belgium. Everyone has it. Yeah.
Are there any other famous cyclists from this area, or?
Sometimes I train with Louis Vervaeke, who will also now join the Koenig Quickstep. We have also Sylvain Moniquet, who's still a young rider, and he don't live here, but Tim Wellens, his father, is also from, let's say, 10 kilometers from here, and he's my mechanic. When I have a problem with my bike, I go to the father of Tim Wellens, let's say. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to meet you and hear your story.
You too.
Next year, nice. What would you like to achieve? What are there any races you'd particularly like to ride?
Oh yeah, I think the smaller races will be for sure the most, let's say, races where I can show maybe my potential. So the not World Tour races. Then I hope maybe to ride a little smaller, maybe the Flèche Wallonne if it's possible, would be nice. Or maybe in the second year to do that. Or Catalunya or something, a race like that would be, but then, you know, that would be then the biggest race, but that would something maybe be what I want to try. And then I think Tour de l'Avenir must be one of the goals to try to get the result there. So the under 23 race.
You'd be riding that for Belgium, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. That will be with the national team. So I think, yeah, for goals in the professional, we need to see, and or the smaller races would be more goals, and for sure to the l'Avenir, and then maybe something nice would be try a World Tour race like Flèche Wallonne or Volta Catalunya. Yeah.
And Bora Hansgrohe, I mean, they are a team in transition. Peter Sagan's moved on. They really are becoming a GC team. It seems. Yeah. Is that something that you've spoken to them? They've spoken to you about a bit as well.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, there was a clear transformation in that team, and that was also for sure something really attractive. They want to improve in that part. They want to develop more climbers, and yeah, that was for sure something what was positive in my ears. Yeah.
Now my mouth's full of delicious, delicious sausage. So we better end it there. Thank you very much.
You too.
Thank you.
You very much.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks very much indeed to Science in Sport for their continued support of the Cycling Podcast. We're very pleased and proud to have Science in Sport by our side going into 2022, another season in the saddle together. If you'd like 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com. And at the checkout, enter the discount code SISCP25. I know you've been doing a lot of festive cycling, Lionel. Have you been sampling more Science and Sport goodies?
Well, funnily enough, I've been on the turbo quite a bit since the start of the Christmas break. And I've been, I actually ordered some of the Turbo Plus range, the menthol.
Mm.
Really surprisingly effective. A sensory sensation, really. And whether, I mean, I don't know the science behind this, but it's a refreshing way to basically fuel whilst riding in what can sometimes be, I mean, I don't want to undersell the training conditions in my office/performance lab. Yeah. But you know, when you've got the fan on and the windows open, it can still feel a bit oppressive, can't it? But the Turbo Plus range is literally like a breath of fresh air.
There is science behind it, isn't it? Yeah, there is science behind it, as we heard from James Morton previously, the nutritionist who works with Science and Sport and helped develop that range. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Kian Utebroeks, very interesting young guy, and obviously a great talent. One corrections corner, Johan de Munck is the last Belgian Grand Tour winner, but he won the Giro in 1978, not 79.
as I said. And if you want to know more about the Pink Panther, as he was known, Lionel's episode In Search of the Pink Panther is very entertaining, and we've just put it on the Friends feed, or it's going on the Friends feed this week. It was released a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and it features Roger de Vlaminck as well. So if you're a friend of the podcast, you can have a listen. You must have fond memories of that little visit to Belgium and your hunting down of the Pink Panther.
Yeah, it was a surreal one in a way, because Roger de Vlaminck and his charisma sort of overtook things. De Moink is a very understated character. If you saw him in the street, you wouldn't think there goes somebody who has won the Giro d'Italia. And de Vlaminck and he...
I mean, I don't have many encounters like that, to be fair, Lionel, when I'm walking down the street.
Well, I mean, even if you walk past Arnaud Démare in Amiens, you wouldn't be walking past a Giro champion, would you? But whereas de Vlaminck is a larger than life character, isn't he? And myself and Jan-Peter de Vlieger from Het Nieuwsblad ended up having quite a surreal lunch with de Vlaminck. We wanted to pick his brains about the 76 Giro and the 78 Giro and find out a bit more about the sort of inter-team rivalry between him and de Moink. And, well, trying to keep de Vlaminck on topic is not easy. And it was a slightly surreal lunch exchange, but made for a very entertaining episode. And I think, you know, says a lot about the sort of Belgian rivalries that flare up from time to time between riders. So kind of appropriate to listen to that, especially as it's now, well, it's more than 4 decades since Belgium won a Grand Tour.
Could Kian be the man? Who knows? But well, I hope you enjoyed getting to know him a little bit, and he's somebody I think that we'll follow closely as his career progresses. A reminder, we mentioned there the Pink Panther Friends special, which is available to listen if you're a friend of the podcast. But between Christmas and New Year, we released our Christmas selection box, 7 episodes for Friends of the Podcast, from Daniel's UFO to a conversation between Lizzie Banks and Ian Boswell, Lionel's chat with Mick Bennett, the Tour of Britain organiser, 10 years of Green Edge and the roller coaster career of James Shaw. There are a couple of others there as well. All available to Friends of the Podcast. To sign up, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. Well, as I said at the start, we'll be back with a full complement next week. That means Daniel will be joining us as we begin to look ahead to the 2022 season. And we'll have news next week about a very exciting new collaboration for the Cycling Podcast in 2022 as well. So until then, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
This episode was produced by Adam Bowie.